I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. Cannot believe we are in the second week of January already. This time's fucking going quick. Anyway, this week on the podcast, the one and only Mark Reeve. Mark is a techno producer and DJ from the UK. Lives in Germany, though. Moved there when he was a kid. Had some great records out on some big labels, including Drum Code. And he's kind of really embedded in the family of Drum Code. Really good to catch up with him. I hope you enjoy the show. Without further ado, Mark Reeve. And we're live. Mark Reeve, how's it going, mate?
Oh, good. How you doing, Will?
Good, man. Just heard you had a skiing accident. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, wasn't a skiing accident. It was more sort of Mark can't do it sort of thing. I took advantage of a bigger slope, and I thought I was like, it's like a biathlon. Is it called a biathlon when you've got the gun on your back and you have to shoot halfway between? It's like, I don't know what it's called. Actually, I don't know what it's called in English. It's called Langlauf in Switzerland, because I'm in Switzerland at the moment.
Okay.
And it's really, really good for your body. I mean, you're really walking with the skis.
Yeah.
And it's like skating. It's literally like skating. And, I just went down a bigger slope and just absolutely fell ass over it.
Sweated
it. I don't know. I just landed right on my ass, and I don't know. I was in agony the first night. Like, I've got my thumb. Look, you can still see it's pretty blue.
Jeez. Did it good, man.
Yeah, so, I over-exaggerated, and I had to go on the bigger slope, and I had to go down there. Everyone was laughing. Obviously, everyone saw it. It was right at the end where everyone was lined up drinking their Glühweins. In Germany and Switzerland, you get Glühwein, don't you? So they always stand there drinking, and all of a sudden, Mr. Reeve comes down that slope, falls arse over head. And I was lying on the floor screaming like, and everyone just sort of like, and after like 2-3 minutes, people start, you know, when they stop laughing, they think something really bad has like happened, because I was like on the floor and face down. But thank God nothing serious happened, because you can break your spine by actually, doing skiing. I mean, see Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, right. Was that his spine, or was that his head?
It was his head, actually. He landed on his head, and he fell into a coma.
Is he still in it?
No one knows. Well, his wife, I think she's called Corinna Schumacher, she's not giving any information out. His manager's not giving him any information out. So it's a really, really sort of tense sort of time, I reckon. I reckon he's awake, but, you know, he's probably completely dazed. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's like he has to be fed. Yeah, he's bedbound. He's bedbound.
When was that? That was years ago.
That was like 10 years ago, I think, about six to 10 years ago.
Such a shame, man.
Well, yeah, he would have still given our English lot a good run for their money.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamilton is like, is it Hamilton at the moment that's like really good for us lot?
I think Hamilton's actually at the point where he's drawn with what Schumacher did.
Exactly. That's what they were saying as well. And I think I saw a story of David Beckham the other day where he was saying congrats to Hamilton, like, for, you know, getting that done and that.
It was like a few weeks ago. Yeah,
exactly. I saw that. Yeah.
Interesting. That dude has done so well in that sport. Like, talking about being the best of your game in anything, like...
Well, Well, it's better than... Well, he has achieved more than, you know, our general footballers in the Premier League, like, just sitting on a bench, like, earning $300,000 a week, like... Yeah. Just by doing nothing. Yeah. I read an article actually last week about Mesut Ozil that can't play for Arsenal anymore because, you know, he's not A-team material. And they sort of said to him, well, listen, Mesut, you've had a big mouth. Right. You've talked too much bollocks. We don't want you in the team anymore. Well, but you can still have your $350,000 a week, which is 1.4 million a month. And I read this and I thought, that's unbelievable. £1.4 million a month.
For doing nothing. For
doing absolute sitting on your ass. He probably isn't watching the game.
I think
Sky Sports, and he's like turning over and watching something in Turkish. Like, oh no, I'm turning bollocks to him. No, fuck that. I ain't watching football anymore. You know what I mean?
I think there's
1.4 mil.
I'm like, I've always been growing up with rugby. So football was like never part of our household. And we'd always just like be like, how are they making so much money when they don't do shit? When the rugby players earn nothing and put their body on the line every week. And
I know.
Fuck themselves for the rest of their lives.
It's horrendous. I actually quite like cricket, actually. That was a really good game. I grew up with cricket. You know, I went to a boys' school, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we still have that in England, boys' and girls' school.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
We've still got that.
Yeah.
I have my uniform on and you draw like a cock on your badge and you know what I mean? Like back in the day, like doing that, like skipping off school, you were smoking somewhere in the back of a bloody bike shed or whatever. No, got your mates first testing out weed and all that stuff. You know what I mean?
What's it like when you mingle with the girls' school though?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, we used to skip school and we used to go to the girls' school because it wasn't far away.
Yeah, it never
so we'd
is.
Go up
is it?
There and chat up all the birds, and then, you know, an hour later we'd come back and play football back in the gym. Do you know what I mean? It's this is like 30 years ago. Like, but it still stays in your brain. I had my bike actually nicked outside the girls' school. I had two BMXs, and I loved them. And a mountain bike I had stolen, but it was a year later. But I had two bikes stolen in front of the girls' school just chatting up a bird. I come back and bike is gone. Second time, come back, bike is gone.
Oh, motherfuckers. It's so funny how you remember these crazy things.
I know.
They're like unimportant and you can't even remember like what I did or what I had for breakfast this morning. And
I can even remember the third bike, Will. The third bike was a mountain bike in KFC. No, it was Kentucky Fried Chicken. It was KFC. I was playing Street Fighter 2. I just had one of them chicken burgers, right? I was playing Street Fighter 2. I was getting to the end game. Like, I think it was, what was the end guy? It was, but by something his name was. I can't remember. Anyway, I was at the end. I was nearly to the end, nearly finished. And I saw this guy in the corner of my eye, I saw this guy, because the window was here, right? I saw this guy jumping on my bike, go off, and I was like, oh, should I chase after him or not? Because I'm on the final bit here. I was like,
did you get it back? Did you get it back?
So I went home. Oh, no, I didn't get it back. I ran after him, but I just couldn't get that bike back. And I went home and I remember, I remember my dad. Fucking back. He really, 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 I was in the doghouse for at least like 2 months after that.
Did you get a chain and padlock for your Christmas the next year?
Well, I didn't get any bikes, that's for sure, Will. I sod the bikes. I mean, I didn't get any more bikes. So, a lot of great memories from England.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bournemouth.
Oh, okay. One of my best mates lives there.
Our family was always back and forth between Croydon and Bournemouth. My accent is actually a mixture between London and Bournemouth. So it's like a little bit of a farmer's boy, but then back again, it's a fucking hell. It's like a mixture, a lovely mixture of both. I wouldn't want to talk Cockney all the time, because if I do, then, you know, it's quite aggressive. So I grew up in sunny Bournemouth and I loved it. I really loved the time. I was surfing and...
Can you surf down there?
Yeah, you can, but the waves are pathetic. Yeah. It's not like Fisher. I saw he's really good, actually.
Well, he used to be a pro surfer.
I didn't know that, did he?
Yeah, he was. That's kind of how he first got his big thing. That's how he became famous. He was a pro surfer. Him and Seds, that's how Cutsnake happened. Because Fish was Cutsnake beforehand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then he was, don't quote me on this, I could be massively wrong, but I'm pretty sure, he used to be a pro surfer. And then he was like a presenter for something, on TV or like a sports or like Red Bull or MTV or something like that. And then he's good.
Yeah, I saw the video. It was yesterday, the day before yesterday. I thought to myself, bloody hell, that guy's good. He really is. It was like he was turning, like really using his back foot to like do those turns. Fantastic.
I mean, nowhere near that.
I mean,
yeah, standing up is a tough one for me.
It is. You have to really stick on the board, and you've got to know how to stick on the board.
That's the thing about living in Australia, though. You have such great coasts, and
excellent waves for stuff like that,
and the weather, fantastic, perfect. Like you don't even have to wear a wetsuit. It's just like
I know. It's awesome. I don't know where he lives actually, Paul, but is it somewhere near Perth? No, it's not, is it?
I don't know.
Because I went to Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, Tasmania.
Do you like touring Australia?
It's just the first flight, isn't it? That's a bit of a bastard. Once you got that first flight, and luckily enough, I talked my way into business class. So.
How did you manage that?
Will, I'll tell you what. I'd rather knock off a piece of the wage or the money that you're earning to get a business class flight and be relaxed.
Yeah.
Flying 24, 26 hours.
How tall are you?
I'm 180. One meter is 80. So that's how much foot is that?
I don't know.
You'd have to put it in the
thing. I'm Googling that because I don't... The Americans
Google it quickly.
180 centimeter in feet.
That's like the average size for a bloke.
5'10", yeah.
5'10", yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm 5'3". Which is like 160. So actually, flying economy is like okay.
Well,
you're
all right then.
Yeah, I'm short as fuck. So it's like I'm all right. The thing is with me,
if I sit on them economic flights, I'm all right for 5 hours. But once it gets over them 5 hours, my ass starts falling asleep, my legs fall asleep. And I constantly have to get up and, and I, you bump into someone, then you fucking, your drink falls over, and then you're scratching on your face and it starts itching everywhere. And you got babies everywhere. Do you know what I mean? Especially on those night flights. I remember flying to San Francisco, and that was horrible. This little girl in front of me, I don't know if she was bitten by the devil or not, because she did not stop. It was every 30 minutes. I thought the first time when she stopped crying, I thought to myself, yes, now I stop. 30 minutes later, 30 minutes later, 30 minutes later. It was like pressing a button.
They're little
every
fuckers.
30 minutes.
They're little fuckers. I don't know if you have kids, but those fuck, don't ever take your kids on a plane, people.
And
not
tell
for
you
a long
what,
time.
I tell you what, Will, there was this Russian bloke sitting next to me. He was in the middle. He had the middle seat and I had the aisle seat, right? And I kid you not, when we got off the plane, this little girl was like here with her mother, like lying here on her chest. And she started laughing at that Russian bloke. She was going, wow. Had a nice sleep, did you, mate? And I was angry, but I thought that was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant. I should have done a picture of that.
Yeah,
that
you should have filmed
so
that.
Class. That was class.
Are you an aisle seat or a window seat? Obviously, no one's a middle seat. Like, middle seats, if you just get screwed out.
I'm an aisle seat, yeah, definitely same. An aisle seat. I used to be a window seat, but ever since I had a panic attack coming back because I had too much booze, coming back from, I think it was Ireland or Sweden. I think it could have been Sweden. I think it was Sweden, actually. I was coming back and I didn't have much sleep and I had loads of beer and booze and whatever. And I got this weird panic attack.
Really?
I started sort of came over me like, oh God, I'm going to die. Someone went, sometimes when you've smoked the wrong weed, right, you get that. Like, I've got to touch the wall. Do you know what I mean? I had those panic attacks. Like, I'm going to die. And there was two people sitting next to me. I thought, oh, fucking hell, I can't even get out of here. So I went to the loo and I said to the flight attendant, I said to her, like, listen, darling, I'm having real panic attacks here. So she gave me a glass of water and did me one of those teas with herbal teas and that. And slowly, because I was talking to her, it was just like, you know, I was just getting out of that panic attack. And you have to talk and you have to do something, pull yourself out of that bloody stupidness you're thinking about. And it actually worked, and I enjoyed the rest of the flight. It wasn't bumpy or nothing. It was just fine.
I always feel really sorry for people that that struggle flying. Like, we see it all a lot. Like, I see it a lot. Anyway, just you look across the aisle and this.
Yes,
like,
a lot. It's something guy. That never gets talked about. You know, they always say the DJs earn so much money, which is, by some people do earn a fortune with it, but. You know, if you've got a flight phobia, like, then that is so bad. It is awful for some people. I mean, I saw this bloke, he was shaking. That must be so horrible.
Yeah.
And every little bit of turbulence that was going on, he was like, shit, and grabbing hold of his chair like, fucking hell, fucking. And I went, you're right, mate. Fuck off.
Yeah. I never forget, I was flying, I can't remember what I was flying into, but somewhere in America, and this woman just literally just like grabbed my leg and was like shit in her pants. I was like, are you all right? Like, we're gonna survive this. Don't worry, we're gonna get through this one. But there's a few, like Shadow Child, I know he really struggles flying.
All right.
Eric Prydz used to as well, like big
time.
Yeah,
I read about that. Yeah,
big
he's not a good flyer.
No, he used to train everywhere. Could you imagine training everywhere?
Oh, God, no.
Everywhere.
I mean, I remember back in the day, R. Kelly said something about he always takes the ship to Europe.
Of course he does, with all of his little girls.
Yeah, exactly. Like, paedophiling it all the way back. Like,
could you imagine shipping it, like, on a tour, and then at the end of the tour, you have to go on a ship to go home? That's like my worst nightmare.
Nah, you'd be puking everywhere.
Locked in a cabin. breathing in everyone's farts for the whole time. Shit food.
Smelling sick. Everywhere, yeah. Sick. Oh. Going out sick over the railings.
It's disgusting.
Back in the room.
Have you ever done like any of these like the like holy ships or AMS?
What I have done is I went to this clinic because I've always had eczema since I've been a little baby.
Yeah.
And I've actually had a microneedling done here on my skin. If you can see those patches, it's actually like millions of like microneedles go in there because I've got some scars from spots and, you know, getting rid of those big spots. I was pressing and pissing around with it. And I got little scars in there.
Okay.
And my girlfriend said to me, well, she knows someone that could do it. If I do a couple of stories in Instagram, I can get it for a little bit cheaper. So, yeah, I had that done a couple of days ago. And it's really, really, you know, when that once that dries up and that gets that peels off.
Does it work?
And you got, it actually does work quite well. Well, anyway, I was in this clinic for bad skin, for eczema. And we had this outing. It was on a blackboard. There was like this outing offered, like to Denmark and back, because it was like in the east, sort of north part of Germany.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's fun. Let's go and do that, because I'd already made some buds and friends. And I said, lads, come on, let's go. You know, it's so boring, this clinic. Let's go out. Let's go to Denmark. Let's buy some stuff, and you know, might get something to smoke or something. And we went. We drove over with the bus to Denmark from Germany, and we got on the boat, and everyone was like starving, hungry, because you know, in the bus it was like 2.5 hour drive.
Yeah.
So everyone gets on this boat and starts piling. It was schnitzel, or I can't remember what schnitzel. It was. I think it was a schnitzel and chicken and whatever. There was the whole works on there, so they were just like whacking it in, like beer piling it in.
Are they German?
So
are these German people?
Yeah. All of them were German.
Okay.
So it was literally all the people from the clinic, like they were actually on that bus, like heading for Denmark. So we got on there. There was also a couple of other people that weren't with us. So we've all got on the boat. Everyone's piling it in. Everyone's like really, really hungry. And I remember as soon as we left the harbour, these big, massive fuck-off waves started coming in. And everyone's going, holy shit. I'm not joking. The first bloke puked up. Then this little kid puked up. Then, oh, my God, there was fruit machines on the left-hand side. They were thrown up in there in the bins. It was horrendous. So I thought to myself, I can't stay down here, down on the lower deck.
Yeah.
I've got to go up. So I go up, right, and I'm hanging on. Like, oh, God, I got me sick. I got me sick. Oh, I'm going to that was literally one of the – well, obviously I've been on a couple of boats coming back from Calais, visiting my dad, but obviously I now take the Channel Tunnel.
So good, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so good. 20 minutes. You ain't got to fuck around anyway. Yeah. You're not going to get sick. It does get a little bit warm when you go through the middle part, but whatever.
It's all right, isn't it? Yeah.
So
on Holy Ship, I remember like – every year you get like some rough weather and you're just like all of these people, it's like nighttime and you're in bed and you just feel the ship moving and you're like, I can guarantee you there's some hungover people that are just on massive come down, just like spewing their guts up. And you're just like, I would not want that.
Oh, God,
I can do like, I did like 8 days on a boat on the like cruise ship. And like, I'm like, yeah. I couldn't ever go on a cruise ship for a holiday.
No. My dad always does it because they get like
deals.
You get like these best deals. Get this choice that, best that, choice that, and they always do that for a couple of weeks on a boat, and like you visit like different countries, and then you come back to England again. So I don't know. I think it's Southampton or Portsmouth, or they have to drive up to Portsmouth. No. Hang on. They went by plane. I think they flew to Barcelona, and from Barcelona they did it. Like, yeah, that's it. That was that way around. But My parents said it was pretty cheap, so that's what they.
They
do
are
all
pretty
the
cheap,
time,
I think. Mm. I think they are pretty cheap, but I couldn't think of anything worse than just going on a boat for like. Although you get to see countries, you like get like 5 hours there or like 10 hours.
Yes, it's rubbish. I mean, it's not for me. It's not for me. It's definitely not for me. I couldn't do it.
So when did you move to Germany?
I moved to Germany when I was 16.
Okay.
My mom and dad broke up, got divorced, and I literally got family on both sides. I mean, I've got my mother's side is German. My dad's side's all English. They're all living in Croydon in London. And my father still lives in Bournemouth with his wife. So she's become a mummy of mine, second mummy.
Nice.
And I've got another second sister. And I've got another sister that lives in Germany with me, but not far from me. So
whereabouts in Germany do you live?
Near Frankfurt.
Okay.
I grew up with Omen and Dorian Gray and all these, famous Frankfurt clubs, Sven Vath and...
Yeah.
I've got like a big history with Sven, so
he's a legend.
It was an addictive time, like back in my youth when I came to Germany.
Well, it's better than Bournemouth, put it that way.
Well, it was better than Bournemouth, but I did enjoy Matcham's Market with Carl Cox.
Yeah.
Carl Cox would come to Matcham's Market near Bournemouth, and he would play a fantastic set, like Happy Breakbeat. It was fantastic. I used to sneak in there. I was only 13, 14. We used to go up there. We used to find someone that was 18 that would sneak us in.
Yeah.
And we'd go through this hole in the fence and you'd be in there. Do you know what I mean? We were all hooked on Happy Breakbeat and drum and bass. And, it was like, if you have witnessed that kind of those kind of raves back in the day, I mean they were fantastic. I mean it really is nothing like it is now. It's different now. I'm not saying it's worse, it's better or worse. It was just a beautiful time in my life.
Well, I find it's like now is a lot more commercialized. It's like. Like back then, even the DJs weren't even making that much money then, really.
No, not just, much. No, just, no, no. Just... You wouldn't. You'd have a fiver on the door.
Yeah.
And regardless if Groove Rider or LTJ Bookham would come up to Bournemouth or
exactly
or Mickey Finn or like all those guys that would come up there, they'd like they weren't earning much. The MCs weren't earning fuck all. Right. I mean, they'd MC for nothing. I remember doing a picture with Goldie as well. I went to got one of Goldie's gigs and was hanging around the booth and got to know him. What a funny guy. I mean,
I've never met him.
Crazy.
Never met him.
And then a couple of years later, he did that film from Guy Ritchie, Snatch, wasn't it? I couldn't believe it. I said to Mum, I've met that bloke. That bloke with the gold teeth. But he's absolutely fantastic guy, very intelligent as well. You wouldn't think it with a bloke with gold teeth. You would think he's an absolute dickhead. But yeah. He's cool. He's a real cool guy. And I know that some of my buds like Pig and Dan, and I know Dan used to produce for LTJ Bookham.
Oh, really? And, where are they from, Pig and Dan?
Well, Dan is literally from London.
I didn't know that.
And Igor is from Palma de Mallorca, so he's Spanish.
Where did the pig bit come from?
They actually met on a plane.
Okay.
And the pig bit came from because Pig likes to eat a lot of food.
Okay.
So they came up with the name Pig because he loves his food, so they came up with the name Pig. So it's Pig and Dan ever since.
When did you start getting into like the whole like not just going to a rave but playing as well?
Well, it was started. I used to play in youth clubs. I can't remember my youth club that I used to play in. What was the name of it? It was in Winton in Embassy. That's it. It was called the Embassy Youth Club. And it would start off, I went there when I was 11, 10, 11. And it started off, we used to be always be playing football up. We used to have this big room upstairs to play football in.
Yeah.
And we used to put up the goals and, you know, we used to play football up there. And I came up with the idea because I was so into drum and bass, breakbeat, techno, anything electronic. And I came up with the idea. I thought, lads, why not? Let's do a couple of parties up there. So we asked the owner of the embassy if we could do it. And he said, yeah. So I started playing at a very, very early age. I think it was 13, 14. All I was doing, I had two cassette decks.
Yeah.
And I used to play press play on one of them. And then the other one, we used to have this little mixer with like two channel mixer. And I used to switch it and put that one up and switch it and put that one up.
That's amazing.
So that's what I used to do in that youth club. And until I was the first, I was the youngest DJ in Poole. That's where I was born. Poole is near Bournemouth. To play in a club in Poole. And I started to really play small little records. It was just one record after the other.
Yeah, yeah.
I had two decks, and I'd literally play one. I'd play Rick Astley, then I'd play Salt and Pepper.
Classic.
And I'd play Dr. Alban, then I'd play Madonna, you know.
Yeah.
I remember my mother had to sign a form for me to DJ there, because it was after 12 o'clock, and obviously all the under 18s had to leave the club at 12 o'clock. They weren't allowed to be there, because the club would be open till 1 or 2 a.m. And I remember my mum had to fill out this form allowing me to DJ there till 2 a.m.
Love
so that was really cool. I used to hang out with the old guys, right, and all the other youngsters had to go home. So I was only 15, 16 at that stage. So that's where I got infected with it. And obviously when I moved to Germany, the first people I met there were obviously people that listened to techno.
Yeah.
So I came to Frankfurt and everyone was talking about Sven Vass, Sven Vass, Sven Vass, Sven Vass, Sven Vass. I was like, wow, who's this guy? Yeah. And I remember, it's what I was speaking to Dubfire the other day. I said to him, you know, I was 17, I think 17, 16, 17. It was literally like 4 weeks after I'd come to Germany. I'd already be into the techno and wanted to go to the Omen Club in Frankfurt.
Yeah. Was that his club?
It was his club with three others.
Yeah.
And I actually got in there I had this moped license. Like because in Germany you had these Vespas and these little Italian bikes, like, and you'd have to do a license for it.
Yeah.
For these motorbikes. And it's not actually a motorbike, is it? A moped or like something
scooter,
like that.
Little scooter.
And I forged it and I was like shitting myself before I got in. I was 16, 17, first club ever to get into a club. And so like a real, real club. And I forged it. And the bloke actually let me in, the bouncer let me in. And I got in there and Will.
Change your world.
That was me. That was me. I got in there and I thought to myself, there was transvestites here. There was people naked there, tits hanging out here. People going absolutely mental, doing lines and whatever everywhere. It was something going on in every corner of this club. People like t-shirts stripped off, sweat come dripping off off the ceiling. Like Sven standing there with one of these masks on because he couldn't breathe in there. Absolutely fucking insane, insane. And I thought to myself, this is it. That is my music. I'm completely infected. I don't want to listen to any other music in my life anymore.
Yeah.
So that was me absolutely gone. I was like, and that till this day, I haven't listened to anything else. I know, you know, I listen to different kinds of music in the car, like to chill down or, you know, sometimes a bit of R&B and hip hop. But in general, I was infected on day one, like when I got into that club.
Do you think, is it different? Growing up, it obviously is different, but growing up in Germany with the influence of techno over there, it's so different to how it is in the UK. Like, how much do you think it kind of changed the genres of music that you were into? Because
it happened instantly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you start making friends, you know, and in England, breakbeat, drum and bass, that was like the main sort of electronic music at that time.
Yeah.
So I got there and it was everyone, Mark O, Marusha, Love Parade, you know, everyone was like crazy about that. Yeah. And Carl would start, you know, Carl would play a totally different set when he was in Germany than he played like in England. So yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, what on earth is Carl playing? It's really fast and it's like loopy techno, like. But I gradually got into it and started buying records, and I used to buy records in Delirium in Frankfurt. And I wanted to play that what Sven was playing. I really like that psychedelic sort of quick techno.
Yeah.
And there was something about it. It was so catchy, and the melodies were so evil. It was like these evil melodies, like really like a horror film.
Yeah.
And I'm a big, big horror film fan anyway. I love horror films. And I was getting frightened to this music. I thought, ooh, I'm getting goosebumps from this right now. This is fucking real. That. This is the real shit. And like this really psychedelic stuff, like real mushroom music, like, oh my God, this is fucking me up right now.
Yeah.
And that really, really, really got me, you know, it took me big time off of drum and bass. It got me, you know, and the way you were dancing as well, you could actually groove to it. Rather as a drum and bass, you'd be jumping around and you'd hear your rasters here. And like, it was sort of like controlled and more groovier, and I just loved it.
Drum and bass, as much as I love drum and bass, it's much more of a younger person's kind of scene, isn't it? Especially in the UK, it's like, well, when I was growing up, it was just kids that loved it. Obviously, it's changed a lot now, but it's like very unsophisticated but so beautiful at the same time, whereas I feel like the more 4/4 pattern like beats is just a little bit more chilled, like it's not as aggressive.
Exactly. Yeah And what I used to like about that drum and bass is that the emceeing, I really liked it. I thought the way that these guys I was fascinated the way that these guys would spit those lyrics. That was also another really artistic sort of, and anyone that's seen these guys perform live, like at BBC Radio 1 for Pete Tong, or for, you know, for the essential sort of, you know, people have done live. I don't know what it's called, that show where they did that live. I think that what was the name of those guys, those four guys that did a live sort of performance?
The Live Lounge.
Yeah, the Live Lounge. They were in the Live Lounge. And I saw that and I was like, these guys have still got it. Like, yeah. I was, the way they were the MCs were doing, spitting those lyrics was for me also another reason why I was so hooked on that music. I thought that was excellent. I thought that was really cool.
For me growing up with drum and bass, it was like the MCs, I hear what you're saying. For me, the MCs always really annoyed me. But when you got a good MC that like wasn't just trying to spit over the whole song and just like did it at the right time and
yeah, exactly. Leave a couple of gaps and just, you know,
give a bit of a break. Yeah.
Yeah, like a bit of a breather in between.
Yeah, that's when I was like, I know what you mean. Yeah. Good. This is good.
Yeah, you did get some annoying ones, that's true. A lot of, you get that really high voice guy. And you knew exactly, well, shitty now, this guy, oh no, he's getting on my tits.
Gotta leave.
No, that tape in the bin.
Yeah. You don't often get it. You don't get people talking on microphones in house music at all, or techno or anything.
Nah,
like
not
that.
Really, do you? No.
Like Carl does it, Pete does it.
It's like a one off, isn't it?
Pete does it occasionally. And then the guy
Sven does it.
Does he? I've never heard him do it.
He always gets pissed, like really pissed, and then he grabs the mic and he starts saying like this absolute I don't know. It's just no one understands literally what he's saying. He's done it at the Time Warp many, many times. You can Google it later on YouTube.
I checked
Put
that
in
out.
Sven Vass.
On the mic.
On the mic and listen to what he's saying. I mean, it's quite sweet, actually, the way he's doing it.
But, who's the guy that introduces everyone at Awakenings? It is Awakenings, I think.
That's Rocco.
Is he like the like head guy?
Yeah, he's the big owner of Awakenings. You can't get past Rocco. If you play there, then you're always going to meet Rocco at one stage.
Yeah,
big guy, very big guy. Looks quite dangerous, actually. Rocco.
I love it. I love hearing him introduced. Yeah. It's so good.
I remember when I just finished my set before Dennis and Pete had come on, and it was just on my last track, and I didn't even see him. He was in, like, literally standing right next to me, and he and I'm like, holy shit, who the fuck's that? I look at it's Rocco behind me. He said, everything is good, Mark. Everything is good. And I looked over to Chris and I said, oh my God, I just shit myself. I better go to the toilet.
I've never played. I really want to play one day.
You'll be in there, Will. I don't know if I'm worry.
I don't know if I'm cool enough for it, if I'm totally honest. Like,
everyone will have their Awakenings day. Like, yeah. And when you do, it's excellent with all the fire going up. And
what's it like?
It's awesome. Like when them, it's not smoke coming down. It's those how do you call it? It's like those pressure. It's like the air coming out with all
the
CO2.
The CO2.
Yeah, and the fireworks and it's like, I mean, I was there in October at ADE, and then Adam played, and then you had the fireworks going off at the top.
Yeah.
Oh my God, fantastic.
Yeah, and then I really want to play.
Someone let off it wasn't a stink bomb, but some real bad gas was let off in the middle of the dance floor. Oh. And I said to Adam, what the fuck is going on? My eyes are stinging. And someone actually let off tear gas bomb or something like that in the middle of the dance floor. Couldn't believe it. And Adam said to me, oh, we better go back. So we went back to the tent. I don't know if you've been in the tent. You've probably been in
the tent. I've never been there, mate. I've never been there.
All right, you've never been there. Right. We went back to the tent backstage and you know, I had to wash out my eyes. It was horrible. Oh.
I've not spent much time in Europe at all touring. Like, my touring days are like literally America. I started more in America than in the UK, which is weird considering I'm English and live in the UK.
Everyone's got their main countries, right? I mean, I'm very good in South America. I mean, yeah. I've been touring a lot in Chile and Santiago. Actually, that comes to my mind. 2 days ago, I was watching a video on YouTube of myself.
Just stroking the ego a little bit.
No. Sometimes, you know, every time I do this sometimes when I'm lying in bed with my missus. Like,
do you Google yourself?
I Google myself and go, oi. Look at that. It's fucking going off. Pretending to be like the real 007. Like, oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. Bond. James Bond.
You've got to Google
really
yourself.
Really showing off. And I'm going like, look at this in Chile. Look, I was in Santiago. Look at it's fucking going off. And actually, your remix was I played your remix from Adam.
Oh, really?
From Losing Your Mind.
Yeah.
So. She said, oh, that's a good track. I said, yeah, it's Will. That's the guy I'm doing this this interview for.
With.
Oh, right, really? podcast, yeah, not interview. So, it's hilarious, actually. And it really did go off your remix. Thanks for that. That was fantastic.
No worries. I was surprised Adam released it, really.
It's awesome. That bass.
It does work.
It really does. Every time I played it, people, hands up in the air. And it wasn't really because of the because the thing is in your mind. It wasn't really because of that. It was actually the drop that people were getting into. It's that big drop right at the end. They loved it. They absolutely loved it, especially in South America. People were going nuts. I played it in Brazil. I played it in Chile, in Peru, in Argentina. And in Argentina, it really went off. In Argentina.
I really want to go to Argentina.
In Cordoba, it was fantastic. I mean, that place, Cordoba, is insane.
When you tour, do you like spend more time? Do you take time out, or do you literally like in out, shake it all about?
I take time out. I like to relax. I like to chill out most of the time on the beaches or on the swimming pool, or get a bit of sun in my face. Because I think usually I enjoy these countries. It's not like an in and out for me, that I need to look at something. I mean, I want to get to know some people. I want to know the culture. I want to breathe in that air, what they breathe in. I want to look at how these countries are developed or have developed themselves. I want to see if everything, what people are saying or stuff that's been going on in the media, if that's true or not.
Yeah, you know,
and you can only see these things if you're actually there.
100%.
It's like an iPhone that's going to say it's going to snow tomorrow, and it shows it's snowing, but actually when you're there, it's not snowing at all. You've got sun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, for me, it's really important to really discover these countries.
I never really did it. I've always, like, I'm always one of the in and out people, and since obviously coronavirus, I've just been like, okay, I need to just when touring's back, every time I go somewhere, or not every time, but when I can, is to like just take some time out, because
really
we do all of this touring, and you're like, and then you come home, and now we're in the situation that you're in now, and you're like, what the fuck, what's the point?
I know. It was the panic attacks that did it for me. I was in and out, and I got these panic attacks, and I thought to myself, well, I have to start chilling. Yeah. I can't do that. I can't leave on a Thursday, come back on a Friday, fly again on a Saturday, and then just, you know, keep on flying and keep on having the stress, and then getting these panic attacks and getting anxiety, because I at that time I didn't have a girlfriend, so I was literally, when I come back, I was on my own.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anyone to talk to. I really think it's also important that you find yourself a partner as well. I know a lot of people saying being single is, you do have your positives by being single, but I actually have changed a lot. I used to love doing things alone, but since I got a little bit older, I really like having someone at home, someone who come home. I can sort of like tell her the stories, what's happened, or it's the same as touring. Actually, I'd love to have someone with me. I know Adam's got Pedro and all these big guys have also got their tour managers, and I really know now why.
Because it really does
make the whole experience different when you can share it with someone. It's very nice.
Yeah, so, on my last tour, I had like my manager kind of came around with me a lot, and I had like some film guys that came around, like, who are all my good mates. And it is something, having somebody there and like being able to go to dinner with somebody, or and you know how it is like, we all have friends in these different cities, but there's nothing better than having somebody that like really knows you, that really like,
exactly,
and you can like, it's not just that surface level conversation. It's we have the best job in the world. Like, I can't, whatever anyone says, we have the best job in the world, but sometimes it is nice to just talk to someone and be like, just have a proper conversation, like have a moan, have a cry, have a whatever. Just because when you're on a plane, when you're in a hotel, you go to a club, you just like same old every
exactly.
You need that.
I remember
time.
New Year's Eve, I had a gig with Ida, with Luigi Madonna, with Weber. And I was talking to Weber, and I said we were coming up, trying to come up with ideas what we're going to do at 12 o'clock. So Luigi came out of the blue, and he said to us, like, listen, lads, why don't you just come up with my Italian friends? And I've got Italian friends living here in Valencia, and let's do it there. So we went all together. We went, Luigi and I and Weber, and we went to this apartment with all these Italian guys, and it was beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful. The food was set up. No one was uptight or being stupid or who are these guys now? We were like family. Yeah. It was so nice. I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget that from Luigi that he invited us. I think Roberto was there as well, Capuano. And it was what a fantastic, lovely night. And I don't think Weber will ever forget that either. Such a lovely family sort of experience.
It's amazing man. I remember going, I was playing, so Boxing Day in the UK is obviously like a huge thing where it's like big family thing. Whereas in America, it's not. And I remember flying out of the UK on Boxing Day to go and do a show in America, and all my friends from like San Fran, they all of their family were over, and they were like, just come over. And it's so nice when you can kind of go into somebody else's family or friendship group and you're just like, yeah, I feel pretty good now. Like, it's so much better than just staying at a hotel room, like twiddling your thumbs, and you're like, what the fuck to do now?
Yeah.
Although
I can't watch any porn anymore. Fucking hell. I'm drained.
Although I say that, and I do absolutely love being by myself. I have this like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah. That is quality time when you sometimes have your own business, that isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
It's like, quality time sometimes when you've always got people around you the whole time, or you've got a big family, kids are running around everywhere. I think that everyone has that sometimes, even a lot of mothers have that. They want to get out. I want to go out with my friends, like just once, or,
yeah,
you know, to take the kids. I just want to be on my own, you know, and just, you know, relax a little bit. Yeah. So
do you have a German passport?
Yeah, I got both.
That's dope.
And I actually got my English passport 3 years ago because I had the feeling that Brexit was going to come up one day or another, or something was going to happen. Something silly was going to. I had a funny feeling about it. So I got my English passport, and so I'm in and out of the UK as I please.
You're so lucky. So,
I know. It's excellent. And actually, I'm allowed to have it as well.
Yeah.
Some people are not allowed to have double passports, but I am actually allowed to have it.
Is that because you have parents in both?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a blessing. It's an absolute blessing for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the fees that are going to come up when you're a DJ and you want to play in the UK. I mean, obviously then you need a work permit or some kind of, you know, it's going to cost about £300, I think I've heard, or between £200 and £300. So what a pain in the ass. Lucky enough, I can just go through the UK border with
UK
with a smile on my face.
Yeah.
And a crunchy.
Do they not have crunchies in Germany?
No, they haven't. Oh, God, no.
Really?
I'd love a crunchy. And what I miss most is a roast dinner.
Oh, yeah, they don't do that, do they?
Yorkshire puds with all that gravy, with a bit of gravy on it. Oh,
I tell you what, though, you have a curry. Is it currywurst?
Currywurst, yeah.
Oh, man, that's like crack. I could eat.
They are.
I could eat that all day long.
There's a place called Best Washed in Town, and they make these.
What's the translation? Is that best sausage in town?
Yeah, exactly. Washed. And they make these sausages so bloody hot. They got an A, a B, a C, D, E, and an F. And literally the F sausage. If you eat that F sausage, you're going to be on the toilet all day. I'm telling you. You can't even, when you put your tongue on it like that, it's like it numbs your tongue.
I'll come over, mate. We'll have to give that a go.
Yeah. When you come over, let me give me a bell and I'll take you up for a Best Washed in Town.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love, that's the first thing I do when I go to Germany is get a currywurst. Love it.
Oh yeah, it's the best thing you do. It's lovely, isn't it?
With some
lovely
chips as well. Chips and curry sauce. That's such an English thing as well, isn't it? Chips and curry sauce. Or chips and gravy.
It is. But when you, I just love all of it.
But when you go to Montreal and you get poutine. Have you ever done that?
Yeah. I've had, but I haven't. I think I had it once in Montreal. Once. Is that a French thing?
It's
French-Canadian.
It's French-Canadian, yeah. So it's just chips, gravy, and it's cheese curds. So it's like balls of cheese.
Yeah, but I think there was too much cheese on it, and I got the old. I didn't throw up, but I got the old. You know the old.
Yeah,
it was too much cheese. After a time, it was too much cheese on it. Like, it literally put me like, ooh, no,
not a cheese fan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I am a cheese fan, but sometimes, I don't know what it is, but sometimes it just makes me, I don't know, if I have too much of it, it starts to get funny.
Yeah, I love cheese. So, I'm from Cheddar, so it's like,
all right.
It was like born with cheese, pretty much. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
I love it around here. one of my good mates from I used to work with, his dad owns a cheese factory. And you just like get cheese every week.
Oh, wow. Like, so you just walk in there and just grab
some cheese
and bobs,
like, or like call him and be like, mate, can you get me some cheese, please? So good.
Great. Nice. So good. Nice.
So when did you start producing? Like, when was it like, okay, this is the time when I need to turn my, was music always a full-time job for you? Or like, what were you doing before full-time music?
I was an IT specialist. Okay. When I came to Germany, I did an apprenticeship first as a metal guy.
Yeah.
So I was sort of on these machines, programming machines to cut metal, like little bolts and whatever and screws, and I couldn't do it because of my eczema, because of my skin. So I finished my apprenticeship, passed my test, and I thought to myself, what am I going to do now? You know, obviously I can't work in that, so I've got to come up with something else. Because I was so into like doing my own computers, like the hardware of it, the hardware side, and you know, getting a main board CPU and like changing everything that I could literally get my hands on. I thought to myself, let's do an apprenticeship as a computer guy. So I did that, finished that, passed my test. And started off as working in banks as an administrator.
Yeah.
Obviously, speaking both languages was for me a bonus and a plus. So I also worked for United Airlines, British Airways, American Airlines in getting, sorting out the ticket printers and all sorts of computer stuff, looking after servers, Active Directories, and literally being the man for everything. So in my spare time, I'd be producing music. Ever since I got to Germany, I was mixing with the right people that already had, they were doing, I think it was Cubase at the time that they were using.
Classic.
And I got into producing music. I was just hanging around in studios with guys that really were into that kind of stuff. And that's when I started producing. I think I started with like 18, 19. So I was, then we were doing records, then we have them pressed. We have a vinyl press in Rosbach near Frankfurt. We used to get that. I don't remember the bloke called Armin. He used to press. We used to do 500 pieces, and we used to deliver the vinyl to the. We'd go up to a vinyl store ourselves and deliver those vinyls to the people straight. You know, we get a certain amount of money for it.
Yeah.
Upfront payment, then we give them like 50 or 40, and you know that's how we do it. And that's bloody hell. That's ages now. That's like 25 years ago.
Long time ago.
It's like that was the start of producing.
So when was the transition from like okay, IT job goodbye, or is it, or are you still in IT?
No, not anymore. In 2011, I always had a very, very strong bind to Cocoon and Sven. And I was big friends with a guy called Ingo Boss from Cocoon. And we'd hang out with each other. We'd go to the parties together. And Ingo, Ingo would always try and get onto the label himself, although he was working there. And I came up with this track called Daybreak, and Ingo said, oh, do you know what? Just put it on vinyl and I'm going to put it in a pile, in Sven's pile, because Ingo would literally sort the records out for Sven.
Yeah.
When he was playing, before he was playing, he sort out all the demos, all the promos that Sven could listen to. Because Sven would obviously have his office just above Cocoon Club.
Yeah.
So Cocoon, the company Cocoon, would be above the Cocoon Club. They had their office up there. They haven't got it there anymore, but they used to have their office up there. So he literally put my record in between the pile of the promos. So Ingo gets a phone call from Sven saying, who's this? What are you doing with this record? And Ingo says, oh God, shit, I'm going to get, oh fuck, what have I done? Oh no, I'm going to get bollock. I'm going to get a bollocking for it. But at the end of the day, he says, I've never heard of Mark Reeve, but I love his record. So he absolutely loved that record. And that was literally the start for me. He played it on the same night he got it in Cocoon Club. Wow. And I remember getting videos from my friends. Oh, Sven just played your track. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He's just played it. And I was playing at another club in Vienna, in Austria. And I literally looked at this video all the way back to Frankfurt because I was driving. And I think that was the start where I thought to myself, well, if I keep on going,
yeah,
I could really make, I could really make a career out of this. So thank God I had my mother always by my side that would always help me out because, you know, I was buying records like mad, not being able to pay my rent, didn't have any food in the fridge. And literally, you know, my mum, I love my mum so much for that, that she was giving me that support I needed at the time. And it came to the stage 2015-16 where I was touring so much.
Yeah.
I was like every week I was somewhere else and I'd come back in the office and you know, try and work. And my manager said to me, well, listen, Mark, I mean, you are absolutely on another planet at the moment. I don't know what planet you're on, but we got Monday and you should be full force with working. Yeah. And I looked at him and said, mate, I've got to go home. I'm fucked, right? I've just done Friday, Saturday DJing. Don't get on my tits, mate, right? I've got to go home. I feel sick. So I did that a couple of times. And then I got pulled in. He said to me, listen, mate, Mark, we need you 100% here. If you can't give you 100%, then go and get your, go out there and do it. Go and try and be a DJ because that suits you much better than what you're doing here. When you're here, You're phoning with promoters. You're phoning with managers. You're phoning with bookers. Literally, I know more than I even know a business that I didn't even know of before because of your phone calling. Because he was always listening to what I was talking. He said, "You're a good lad. You're a funny lad. You're excellent in the team. You're a team worker. But you have to fulfill your dream. Go out there and do the DJ, and that's better for you."
Lovely.
And I said, "Thanks, mate." I mean, I worked there 5 years. I was doing that 5 years. And yeah, literally all together with all the IT work I was doing at the stage, I did it 12 years. And after 12 years, I thought to myself, let's have a crack.
Yeah.
Because I can't do both. I can't focus on both. Let's get going. At the time, Adam was writing to me like mad from Drum Code. And, you know, I was doing records like crazy. And then I did another record with Adam, I think, in, whether was it 16 or 17, we did another track together. And I thought to myself, yeah, now's the time. Then I got Awakenings, and that was the time where I thought to myself, you can't do another job because it's not going to work. It's just not going
to
work.
There comes a point when you have to go full hog, even if you're not earning the amount of money that you need to be going, but you need to put all your time into it because otherwise both things aren't going to work. The day exactly. job won't work and the DJing won't work because you're not putting enough time into it. And sometimes you just have to go, fuck it, let's try it.
Exactly. And I thought to myself a couple of times, I'm fucked with this music. I can't be bothered. The start when you're sending out demos and one's listening to it, not getting an answer back.
Yeah.
You're getting all these processed answers back, auto answers back going, oh, I love the track, but it's not for the label.
Yeah.
So everyone's been through that one. I do it myself as an A&R. I've got my little label Subvision.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to tell people that the same. So I can't get into big conversations because I ain't got the time to do it, right? So I know I'm people are frustrated by that, but if you keep on going and your music is good and it really is good, then you will get somewhere with it. So that just proved me. I just needed the time to really focus on the money side.
Yeah.
Is it going to really work or not? Because you have to pay bills.
Of course.
No one's got a money machine down in the basement that prints pounds or euros. You have to pay your bills. And it had to make sense before I became self-employed at the end of the day. So at the end, I thought to myself, yeah, well, let's have a crack. Let's get going. And I pulled it off until now, till Corona came. Corona fucked literally a lot up because I was booked in major festivals this last year, also in Germany. And it really, really, really pissed me off. I was having some big gigs there and it's pulled me back. But, that leaves me with more sort of time to get into studio. You know, Adam's wanting another. Adam's wanting stuff again, so it's like, I want to get stuck in studio work as well, which I can do now because you can't do it when you're like. The problem is when you're touring that you've always got that sort of pressure, sort of, oh, I have to get it done before I go to South America. Oh, I've got to get it done before I go to Brazil. Oh, I've got to get it done before I go to somewhere else. And then you've always got that pressure behind you. And you've I've forgotten I've got to do another remix. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it's so lovely to not have that sort of
pressure,
that pressure behind you. So that you can literally just go in the studio at literally 3 a.m. in the morning if you fancy. Have a bit of chocolate, have a Coke and just like
crack on
with studio work. So,
It's been an amazing time, although coronavirus has sucked for a majority of people, but I've been so productive. It's been amazing. And I bet you have. And I'm sure a lot of our mates have, and we're so lucky to be in that situation because it's like, we don't need to go anywhere. Our lives in a studio revolve around just sitting in a dark room by yourself, if you know what I mean. And
I know.
We're so lucky that we can still do what we do apart from DJing and the money, the finances kind of suck, but it's what it is. Just got to roll with it. And I tell you what, the thing I've learned is that I don't need that much money to survive. And I don't.
Well, yeah, that's true. I do have a passion for cars.
Okay.
That means I have a C43 at the front that has to be paid for.
Yeah.
I've got to pay that monthly, which is a bit of a nugget for me up my bum at the moment. But till now, in Germany, we have got a very good system where you do get that help. Yeah. We've had like a November help and a December help, and it was like 75% of what you earned in 2019 in the same months.
Yeah.
So that has helped me a lot. It's been hard, but it's doable.
Yeah,
it was doable. I don't know if it couldn't go on for ages, but till now, thank God, it's been like it's doable at the moment. So I've got the time, and I've also got a lot of energy, to put into those new tracks.
That's the thing, isn't it? What's your plan with regards to release-wise? Are you at the point where you're like, I'm just going to release music, or are you, okay, there's no clubs, music on streaming services kind of, or techno stuff? Oh, no,
anyone that knows Drum Code, anyone that knows Adam likes, Drum Code is sort of like a family sort of thing. Adam loves people that are loyal to the label. And I'm a big fan of tracks that stand out, that are not just sounding the same.
Yeah.
If you listen to my stuff, it's like with Far Away and all those sort of tracks. It was like a timeless sort of music going on that Adam, could play in 20 years. It wasn't that sort of Drum Code sound. It was more sort of, it would have nearly fitted to Tale of Us and Afterlife,
yeah.
Which they wanted. They wanted the track actually as well, but I ended up giving it to Adam because I've been a loyal guy to Drum Code since 2012. Now I've been working with them, so it's like, and I think that once you have got a bond with someone that has got a good label like that and a massive label nowadays, Drum Code has become it's been a big turning point for that sort of music, for that sort of genre. It's changed techno a little bit as well, and some people I won't mention the names, some people say business techno to it. I think it's a good thing. I've had a lot of good times with Adam and Drum Code, and I'm going to continue by delivering. I still want to, be in that group of people because I enjoy myself with them. And
that's what it's about.
Amazing times.
That's what it's about at the end of the day, is that we quit our day jobs. We do what we do. We spend hours in the studio. We spend hours touring because we enjoy it. And if you enjoy something, why stop? It's no point.
Exactly. I mean, I do have my own label that I just use now and again to release tracks which I feel that don't really fit to Drum Code and Adam doesn't really want, but I still feel that there's a quality behind it.
Yeah.
And the quality is enough to release. So then I do release it. But I've had such an amazing time with Drum Code at the moment. And I know others have, like Leighton or Weber or there's many of them, Enrico, or there's loads of them that have had an amazing time at Drumcon. I think it's still a label that I'm going to mix with and continue delivering timeless tracks.
Yeah, I love
that. I'm not the big fan of just releasing anything.
No.
I want the track to be so good and so clean that you can polish your teeth with it.
Yeah.
And those tracks, even if it takes 1 year, I don't give a toss. It's like, I'll wait that 1 year until that track is so crisp that I can release it. And then I know it's going to do well.
Yeah.
Rather than,
winging it,
bringing tracks that, are half-hearted. Maybe I could have invested a bit more time.
Yeah.
Because I've done that in the past, at the beginning. And then I've always thought to myself, well, why didn't I change it? Why didn't I make it better? Why didn't I concentrate more on the sound that it sounds a bit more cleaner? Yeah. And well, those are the things you do when you're younger and mistakes you make. And the good thing about getting older is you become wiser.
Well, I think also you become a little bit more of a perfectionist, or I can only speak for myself, but for me, it's like, I've released records that I'm not happy with, and I don't want to be in that situation again. I don't want to be in 10 years time. I don't want to be like, oh, I wish I didn't release that record. I've done that before. So now I'm like, everything I put out, it has to be something that I absolutely love. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do any. I've like squeezed all the juice out of this record and I can't get it any better. Mm. And then you're like, okay, let's put it out.
Well, it does show. I know that people, there's a lot of Spotify haters out there, but you see when a track's doing good, because obviously you have your techno bunker and you've got all these Spotify related playlists. But if you have 2 million or 1 million, 1.5 million or 3 million in techno or tech house, even tech house, you probably have more streams. But if you're on those lines, you know exactly that you're doing something right.
Yeah, totally.
Because you know the record's being listened to by people. It doesn't matter how much. I couldn't care less about the money. If I get a 0.00012 cent pro stream, I don't care about that. Yeah. But it's just showing me that, you know, people are listening to my stuff and I've done something right. So,
And I think that translates into ticket sales and being booked, and it takes time. It takes a long time. But I think the good thing about streaming services is that it's actually giving a platform for us to release our music and more people to hear it. Like, if you do a record that has 2 million streams, like, you would never have got that years ago. Never have got
no,
that.
No, never. And my agent, he always says to me, can you send me a list, you know, of all the Spotify plays, which countries? Because I want to look at the countries that are listening to your music.
Yeah.
And that's very, very cool, because then you can see where is your music hitting the spot and where is your music not hitting the spot. You know what I mean? It's like, you can generally see the countries that are getting involved in your profile. Totally. So that's very interesting and very cool, regardless of if it's bringing money, the major money or not. I don't want major money anyway. I'm quite happy with what I've got.
Yeah.
So that puts me in a position where I don't have to think about money, and I can just get going. And I don't even think about money. I know there's so many people that want to get rich and they want to have three houses and they want to have a Porsche, they want to have a Ferrari. I don't need all that shit. Do you know what I mean? All I need is a roof over my head where I can produce music.
No, I respect that, because I think especially... Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
I think in this day and age, especially with social media, it's like people want to show that they have wealth, and they like to show that they have wealth even if they don't have wealth. By getting a car that they can't afford, but if you know what I mean, and doing all these things, like, and I would be lying if I said I didn't want to earn more money. But it's not, especially coronavirus, since I've had like nearly a year out, it has made me realize that like, it's not about just making money. The thing that I miss about earning money is more so the purpose of what all this is about. And like not being able, the money's the like aftermath of what we do, right? So you play a show, so you play a show and you get paid. I'm not playing the show to get paid. I'm playing the show because I absolutely love playing, and then I get paid for it. And I think that's the thing, is not being able to play shows and not being able to tour around and visit places and see friends and things like that. That's for me the thing that it's kind of taken away. It's like there's no real purpose to like doing all of this. And what are you working towards? Because like, let's say I've got all my releases ready for this year, it's all planned. So you're like, well, what the fuck do I do? Like, I love writing music, but I'm not writing music for a club now. Like, I'm just not. It's because I've been out of a club for 10 months.
Me too, yeah.
And it's just like, it is tough. But again, it's changed my perspective on what I want in the long term in life, I think.
Well, what actually changed me is that I have had months where I've earned a fuckload of money, right?
Yeah.
But I've actually spent a load of money as well. So literally, the more money I've had, the more problems I've had, yeah, because I've bought things that have either gone wrong or broken or have to send back. Or so, and what I hate the most is this cockiness from some people, the cockiness side of it. When yeah, you earn a lot of money, you change.
Yeah.
Some people change into this horrible beast that puts on a poker face when they start playing. They're not interested in what is in front of them or left or right. They're just interested in themselves.
Yeah.
They want to get out of the club within 2 minutes after they've played. They don't really want to do pictures with anyone or say hello to anyone. Yeah, they just want to fuck off and just, you know, earn that money and just get, that's the thing that gets me the most, this cockiness in our scene or in our business. That really puts me off sometimes. This not being human, yeah, the human side has gone missing, and we're becoming, you know, some people are becoming just robots.
Yeah.
And you know, if people are writing comments, for Christ's sake, you can't answer all your comments, right, on an Instagram posting, for example, but you can answer some of them, for Christ's sake. If you've got the time to post a fucking picture in Instagram, then take the time and comment under people,
yeah,
that are supporting you and showing love for you.
I agree.
Right? That's what really gets on my nerves sometimes when I see some of the big guys. I'm not saying any names. You know, it's not just the big guys. I think it's in your system, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it really does have to do with the money you're earning or not. But that's the thing that really bothers me the most. This just, you know, this being totally, yeah, you know, totally ignoring sort of the sport and the love you're getting from people. And, you know, I like giving back. I like giving more back.
Yeah.
I like getting back, but I like giving more than I get back.
I think realistically, the what you're saying is the ego. The ego in people, in certain people that they have, that because they're a famous artist or because they're a famous whatever, painter, whoever, is that they think that they're too good to kind of give back. And that's all that's all down to your ego. And I think you have the people that are extremely huge, they're never going to go anywhere because they're so big. But majority of them will have their 5 minutes of fame, and then eventually, because they haven't built that community, because they haven't given back to their followers, their fans, whatever you want to call them, the community just loses interest, and then it gets to the point where people just don't actually want to interact with you, and they're not fussed about seeing you because they've seen you so many times, and you don't give them anything back. And like, I respond to everyone on every platform pretty much.
Yeah, I try to as well. Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I haven't had a hit record. Don't get me wrong, I've had a good career, but I'm not like one of the biggest artists in the world. And yeah, I've still got a great following. And part of the reasons because of that is because I comment to everyone. Anyone that DMs me, I respond to them. Like, I will put as much time as they put into me. If, you know, I spend an extra hour at the end of a show taking photos and stuff like that. You kind of, I'm just like, also, like, these people pay so, like, especially in America, these tickets are expensive in America. Like, when you're talking, like, somebody spent, like, $50 just to get in, like, a general admission to come and see you. And you're like, these younger kids have spent a lot of money to come and see you, and you can't give them a hello. I'm just like, it's not like we're rock stars, if you know what I mean. It's not like we're playing stadiums and things like that. Although some people are, but give the time back, and it might not come back straight away to you, but it will eventually come back. It will pay off everything.
Although I did get into trouble once because I answered someone back that said they were masturbating to one of my tracks. And I thought that was a little bit weird. My girlfriend said, "You have not answered her back." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Thanks, for Christ's sake. What am I supposed to say?" She said, "Oh, no, she's, you know, that was really stupid. I wouldn't have said anything." I said, "Yeah, well, I said, thanks." I mean, because I told her about it and I shouldn't have said anything. I should have just answered back, not said anything. But that was a weird message.
Yeah, you do get the odd weird one.
Yeah, you get the weird one, don't you? Oof.
And you always get the person that's asking to collab with you.
That's, oh, yeah, you get that one. Back-to-back collab. Yeah, I've had that a couple of times.
I had one today. And he's like, this
is... Oh, right, you had one today. Collab.
This is my first track. Can we collab? I'm like, oh,
Will, it's our first podcast. Can we collab?
Exactly.
Oh, it's awesome. That just makes your day. You don't want to answer back, say, no, we... No.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, what's the nicest way that I can be like, and it's not that I don't want to clap.
What's the nicest way of being horrible?
Yeah, because I'm just like, maybe one day, we never know. Like, I don't really collab with many people just because I'd rather be in the studio with somebody collabing than on the internet. Like, for me to collab, I'm like, have to like really know the person, because then you kind of get how each other work. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on collabing?
Well, yeah, I've had the internet collabing most of the time. Although I spent some time with Ping and Dan together in Palma. Obviously with Adam, we were sending the samples back and forth and the ideas together. Then I had one with Umek, and it was like, also we were sending us, you know, we were sending the project back and forth. But obviously, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's much nicer when you're in the studio with people that, you know, really know. And then,
yeah,
over 2 weeks, just get a big project together, and not just one track, but obviously a whole EP, sorted, and take time with it, hang out together, go for a restaurant together, and well, obviously not now, but we were going out to restaurants, we were hanging out, we went out to parties, then we come back, then we'd make some more music, and then next day we make some more music, then we chill, then we play PlayStation, then we do this, then we do that, hang out at the beach.
It's important. It's so important.
Yeah, it was just really cool. I mean, that makes me come up. That's made me come up with an idea now to talk to Pig again and maybe do another Pig and Dan versus Mark Reeve. Who knows?
Yeah, man. Because I think it's the experience, isn't it? It's like it comes to a point where it's like it doesn't even matter if we finish a record. It doesn't matter, because it's just a nice experience. Whereas when you're like collabing with somebody on the internet, you're like, we have to do this.
Yeah,
but when you're like together, it's that experience of just being with somebody and just like,
it might be a project that never gets released, for example.
Exactly.
You know, I've still got a couple of tracks of Pig and Dan that I did. I'm playing them, but I'm not going to release them.
Yeah.
So these ones are always going to be little special, little secret weapons that I'm going to just, and people are going to come up saying,
"What's this?
What's this?" And I say, "Oh, I can tell you, but you can't have it."
That's the best thing ever, isn't
it? Little secret grenades in your pocket. You need a couple of secret grenades one's got. Those are the best ones. And the ones you've been in the studio like for 6 hours and it's not really finished, but you say to yourself, well, I'm going to give it a crack anyway in a club, see if it works. And it comes on and it goes fucking off.
And it slams.
Like, oh my God.
And then you're like, I
don't release it.
And you're like, I don't have to like deal with it. I don't have to like fix anything. Just how it is, and it's always going to sound like that.
It's just like real raw sort of material coming out. Like,
half mastered. How many times have you had records that you're like, this record needs to come out, but no other like label is like gets it? I've had that so many times, and then when they hear it in a club, when they eventually play it, they're like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, I've had that. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think I've had four EPs on Drum Code, and I don't know. It's something about, I don't know. Adam always gives me a chance, although it's not really like the rest. I think he likes my sound because it's a bit unique.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm not being boasty or anything like that, but I listen to my tracks and then I listen to the general sort of drum codey track.
Yeah.
And it's very different to the rest of them. So I think it's also listening to Enrico. When I listen to Enrico's stuff, although Enrico is, his music's a lot more, I think his music's a lot more commercial than mine.
Yeah.
More hands up sort of sound, more proggy sort of, more sort of a proggy trancey sound.
Yeah.
But I would say it is something unique to have that unique sound. And it's like a coming back to what I said before. Like if you have that bond with a label, then I think till it comes out, people really then start understanding what it is about. Yeah. Funnily enough, people then say, oh, that's a drum code track, or that's a Dirty Bird track, or that's a Ninja Tune track, or as soon as it's funny, or it's a Hot Creation, oh, that's a Hot Creations track. You know, it'd be a track that was on maybe on a defected various artists album, yeah. And then it would come out on Hot Creation. But it would be a Hot Creation. Oh, that's a Hot Creation track there. Oh, yeah. I can hear it. Yeah. I mean, weird, isn't it? That weird.
It's funny how people...
When you start thinking about the tracks that you're going to release next and the label you're going to work with, you think just, oh, no, that doesn't fit to the label. And then you send it out and then you get back like, oh, this is exactly what I was looking for. I'm like,
Yeah, I think weird. That's the thing, is because a lot of labels do have their sound, and you need a sound for a label. You need that unique sound so people can cling on to it. So people know, they go to a drum code show, they know exactly what they're going to get. And that's no disrespect to drum code. It's the same with Dirty Bird. You know what you're going to get. Hot Creations, yeah. You're going to go to a Paradise Party. Maybe not so much the lineups have changed a little bit, but you know what you're going to get. And it's like, you need that identity as a, I hate the word, but as a brand, you need that identity. But it's the thing that cracks me up is when people get like too up their own asses and like, oh, I won't go to Drum Code Party, or I won't go to Hot Creations Party, or I'm too cool for Dirty Bird now. And you're like, fuck off. Like 3 years ago, you were loving it. Just like, enjoy it.
It's just ridiculous. I've got wankered once and I've danced to a David Guetta song, for Christ's sake. Fucking just admit it.
Haven't we all? Haven't we all?
I had a Russian bird in Bournemouth I was humping. And we went out once and we got pissed. I had a load of vodka Red Bull and we were dancing to David Guetta and fucking Justin Bieber. Fucking hell, there it is. It's gone out. I've admitted it. Ooh, damn, I'm a bad person now.
You're going to start wearing,
you know what I mean?
You're going to start wearing white jeans now.
I listen to EDM. I'm EDM now. Oh my God, what am I going to do?
Anything.
I don't know what's wrong with these people. I've got, there's loads of songs, even if they're EDM. I've listened to a couple of tracks and I thought to myself, oh, that's not bad, actually. Yeah. Whatever. You know, this stiff sort of stiff people sometimes really... You know, I luckily enough, I don't know many people like that. So.
No, me neither. Thank fuck.
I've got wide, you know, Carl is the best example, actually, yeah. Carl Cox. You know, he digs down really, really deep down in his little crate and pulls out like magical sort of 70s, 80s, 90s records that you think, oh my God, it's an old Motown that I haven't heard for like 25 years. And just whacks it on his ones and twos, and you think to yourself, "Fucking hell!"
There's only a certain amount of people that can get away with doing that as well.
I know, but it's just amazing. I mean, I listen to that show that he does quite often, and I think this is great music for the car. I mean,
yeah,
just you know, get all that stuff and get that set right in the car. Do you know, there's a Motown and like sort of like blues stuff that's sometimes going on in his little show there. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
He is so, the G man.
I think it just also all these different genres makes you come up with more ideas to put into your tracks.
Yeah,
You know, you shouldn't be like saying, no, I'm not going to listen to this. No, I'm not going to go to that party. I've been to a hip hop or an R&B party and I've been inspired by it.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
I think it's about who you're around and the people you're with at the end of the day. You can go fucking anywhere if you're with a good bunch of mates.
Yeah, exactly. And I got inspired. I think I was at a dinner gala party, garden party, something like that, where all sorts of music was being played. I come home and I think that was the time where I did Far Away. And I got inspired by the stuff that there was obviously on the Dune 2, there was an arpeggio that I literally just sort of like, you know, how can I say it? Because I got a lot of jip in YouTube saying, ah, it's a fucking Dune 2 fucking arpeggio in there and you nicked it. And yeah, but I said to that guy, I said to him, listen, mate, but I had to sit like an hour for 2 hours sorting it out and it wasn't good when I started off. You know, you do have to make some tweaks and some stuff to it that it sounds good, okay?
These people say,
oh, I could have done that in 2 minutes. I could have done that in 30 minutes. It would have been fine. And I would say, no, 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 no. It's not like that.
Definitely couldn't. I love those people, though. I love those people because I'm just like, oh, go get
it. It doesn't matter what you do. You get these people that just come round a corner and they just slag you off. It doesn't matter what you do.
I love them.
You do it wrong. You do it wrong all the time, and they are better than you.
I love them. I absolutely love them.
And you can't be better.
I used to have some guy, and he would always like comment like, really horrible stuff on my pictures on Instagram.
It reminds me a bit of Alan Partridge. You don't know me now, do you? Like when they were fighting in the studio at Norwich.
Yeah.
Do you remember Norfolk Knights, Will? Norfolk Knights.
Classic.
That was so funny when they started taking the piss out of each other.
Classic. Yeah, and this dude, he would like always comment horrible shit. And I ended up just being, I'd always respond and be like, all right, mate. And then I DM'd him. And I was like, mate, you do realize like, it doesn't bother me what you say, but you're going to say something to somebody one day and it's going to really fucking hurt them. And you're not going to realize the power that your words have on social media. And he was like, oh yeah, man, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. I just do it for a bit of a laugh. And I'm like, well, it's not.
Oh, wow.
I was like, it's not funny, man. Like, it's fine for me. Like, I can deal with it. I can handle it. But you're a 35-year-old man. Go fucking get a life. Yeah,
you always get, you know, I love the banter.
Yeah.
Like, the banter's so funny.
Oh, I hate that
word.
Like,
well, and you're like, oh yeah, but I didn't get it, mate. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty hurt right now. Like, that hurt. I feel like I might not be able to sleep for the next couple of days because you've just like really pissed me off. My blood pressure's sky high. My wife's, she's even sweating by looking at me.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely wankers, mate. We've just done an hour and a half and I've got to cook some pizza for the family.
Good stuff. I've got to go downstairs as well and talk about my wounds.
Do it, man. Yeah. Make like, be a proper man and drag it out. Like,
exactly.
That's what we do the best.
Phone my mum.
That's what we do the best. Before we go, how can people follow you, check you out, etc, etc?
Well Instagram is Mark Reeve Music. The same on Facebook, Mark Reeve Music. They're both the same. I've actually put in a new Mark Reeve Official because I wanted a second page just for, I don't know why I've done the second page, but I just felt like doing the second page.
Coronavirus, you got bored.
No, because my one, well, funnily enough, my first one's full of bots.
Oh, really?
Full of shitty bots. Yeah.
I
don't know where they are coming from. I get like 15 users a day. And none of them, I haven't been on any sort of weird profiles or something like that, or I've done some weird shit. I just get like 15 people that have got nothing to do with techno and I don't know where it's coming from. And I thought to myself, well, fuck that. I'm going to start fresh. I'm going to start a fresh page with a Mark Reeve Official and just see and work out the you know, the real techno followers, and blend out like the nail polish ones.
The shit ones.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These companies that want to sell nail polish or, you know, or these influencers or these women that are just selling total different other products than whatever you're doing. So, yeah, I just thought about doing that. That's Mark Reeve Official. The others are Mark Reeve Music. So everyone can check that out. And SoundCloud, I've got just Mark Reeve. And, yeah, I've got some, not yet, but I'm not going to say anything yet. But I do have some tracks up my sleeve that might be coming out this year.
Nice, man. Look forward to it. Well, thank you for being on, man. And let's catch up soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
Big love, mate.
Have a great evening.
You too, mate. And that is a wrap. Big ups to Mark for coming on the show. And thanks for listening. Huge love to everybody that's listen to the show. If you did enjoy it, please share it. Please give us a little review. Send it to your friends. Send it to your whoever you might think will listen to it. Big love. Keep safe, and I'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.